Welcome to this week's edition of Pit Stop. With me, Jaco van der Merwe. I'm joined by Mark Jones and Charles Bosch. This is our last edition for the year, and we've got something nice planned for you. Now, there are a lot of awards on the South African motoring landscape, some more consumer-orientated awards, some exclusively only Bucky awards. Around the world, we get Women's Car of the Year, all sorts of thingies. We've decided we're not going to categorize anything. Each of us, it's been a long year. It's been an interesting year. Each of us is going to go through highs and lows of the year. It doesn't have to be model specific. If it's a low, it doesn't mean it's a poor model. We were just disappointed in something. Maybe on the high side, there was just something that stood out in a particular car for us. I mean, many cars are alike nowadays, and fine margins. We'll throw Mark underneath the bus straight away, and we'll ask him, Mark, highlights of the year, do you have maybe a short list? Which cars did you like? And if you can, pick one that stood out for you.
Yeah, like you said, we're not going to do this in great technical detail. So we just kind of, our rate of car, based on how does it make me feel, a smile, you know, was great fun.
Well, whatever. This is our show, and we do it our way.
Yeah.
Correct. So when somebody says that was the most, mundane choice, or how stupid can you be? Sorry. For me, it was Lekker, and I'll stick with that. So, yeah, the one that I suppose most wouldn't expect, and it's long in the tooth now and as a thing, but it just really took me back to my youth and pure motoring, where – your kind of skull was the airbag, your right arm was the window winder, you know, cars were just different. And that was the Polo Vivo GT this year. I really thought, what a cool car to drive again. So basic, so nice to just move the gears. It really did everything simply. So that, for me, right up there, and I can understand, you know, why that car's so popular, the brand is so popular. It's just cool. My sort of then top two, again, performance orientated, because it's about smiles. I mean, if you want to talk fuel consumption, that's another day. But it is a toss-up. I would have to say the Ranger Raptor. I mean, I had the privilege of driving it up here and testing it. I had the privilege of doing a coastal test on it.
You spend a bit of time in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got intimately involved with that thing, and it made noise, and it was stupid fast. And it's everything a stupid car should be. It does everything. You're going to kill yourself in it. You really don't want to go and cart cows in it and whatever. It drinks fuel. I mean, I couldn't, and I'm sorry, Ford, I couldn't make Joburg to Durban on 80 litres of fuel.
No way.
And I really tried. I had it on speed cruise, and it just didn't get there. I mean, it shouldn't exist. I mean, there's no reason for it. I mean, the Toyota execs probably roll their eyes and they say, right, what do you need a 300-kilowatt Bucky for? We got 150 and 165 in their GR. And I'm like, yeah, well, drive it, you'll understand. So that for me was right up there. And BMW's M2. It's flawed in so many ways in terms of I didn't quite like its straight-line manners and that. But, gee, it hauls, it's fast, it's fun. It's all those little hooligan things. It resonates as much as everybody hates the look. Every young person looks at it and appreciates it. It's just a fun car. So I have to say, Polo Vivo GT, Raptor Ranger, and then BMW M2. My sort of three most fun cars this year.
Great. Moving over to Shoal. Shoal, time's limited, so we're going to restrict you to 31.
31.
So shoot your highs of the year.
Well, I made a little bit of a list here, not as extensive as Mark's one.
But 31, sorry, I meant 11.
Okay, fair enough. So for me, it was a car that I drove it at launch at the beginning of the year, and I was not convinced because it just felt underpowered. One of my colleagues who drove with me described its performance as merely adequate. It needs a bigger engine. But then when we got it on the launch, when I got it to drive on test, I think the engine had probably loosened up by then, and it was quite impressive. It's big. It's incredibly well equipped. It's a very underrated product. It's the Hyundai Palisade, the new facelift Palisade. There was just something about it. I mean, yes, it still needs a smidgen more power from that 2.2 diesel engine. But apart from that, it was so supremely comfortable, incredibly well equipped. It is quite a bit expensive. It's now over 1.1 million rand, which is still a lot of money for a Hyundai and for essentially for people who still see a Hyundai as a budget brand and not a premium brand. But for me, that was a big standout. And then going along with Mark's also top three, the other one was the, I know he wrote it in the GR Cup, the Toyota GR86, the manual. It was just such an analog feel. The one that we had was painted in the initial the Animane colors, which was something quite very a tribute to the Animane series, which I quite liked. It was just such a hardcore, back to basics, honest thing, manual gearbox. And then the third one was also another Toyota product, the Toyota Land Cruiser 79. You don't get Land Cruiser 79s often. Toyota does not need us to sort of sell. They sell 300 Land Cruiser 79s a month. To drive one is an honor. It turns 40 years old next year. You can feel it. It is so dated. It lacks serious mod cons. But as a feel-good, you just cannot get it. It's expensive, everything. But it is just such a good feel-good thing to drive. So that will be my top three. Palisade, Toyota GR86, and Toyota Land Cruiser 79.
Okay, I guess that just leaves me on my shortlist. I would basically have a tie for third place. That would be the Mercedes-Benz, the Mercedes-AMG A35 sedan. And then also the BMW M340i. I just think both of those are such an absolute perfect mix of performance and everyday drivability that, yeah, if I had the money, I would really look into it. Moving on to, I would agree with Mark, the Raptor. I was privileged enough to have three priceless days up in the dunes in Walvis Bay in Namibia. And just to see, yeah, Mark tested it on tarmac, 0-100. We had the privilege of drifting it along sand dunes up and down, and just that was exceptional. And then my winner is probably a bit of a surprise. It's the Mahindra Scorpio N. Not Scorpion, Scorpio. N. They make that N uppercase and big, bold red. Just, I think that car came in with not a hell of a lot of expectation. And again, we have the privilege of driving that up some rocky and sandy tracks there in the Western Cape. And I think just the way that car behaves, and it's coming up against some pretty serious contenders. I mean, 7-seater, body on frame, the Fortuner, the Everest, the Pajero Sport. And I think at that price, it's really, really a good product. And I think it's very underrated and it's got huge potential. But yeah, now unfortunately we need to move down the ladder and go for some lesser exciting, or should I say more disappointing moments of the year. And again, I'll start with Mark. What stood out for you this year in terms of disappointments, or something that didn't sit well with you, something dodgy, iffy?
Yeah, listen, I'll keep this short because, you know, it's always easy to criticize. But, yeah, we drive great cars, but sometimes we just left a little bit flat. I would guess Opel would probably say no, but I drove the Grandland, being a big fan of the brand for many, many years, having owned a lot of their product. The Grandland SUV is really, really good, but it does nothing special. There's no reason why you would buy that over anything else. And at the price, I drove it, I looked at it, and I thought, wow, where's that slightly quirky Opel passion that you, if you had one in your driveway, you kind of knew why you had one, and it was something, a badge you wore proudly. This would get lost with anything else, so that disappointed me a little for no reason other than it didn't resonate. The second car that sort of drove and didn't think was really that good, and there was the two Protons, the X50 and the X70. I just think we've spoken about the Chinese. You know, they're bringing seriously good product to market. The X50 and X70, although it's out now, it's overpriced. It doesn't have a lot of spec. The irony is it drives pretty well.
Mm.
You know, it's smooth. It does. They've got that right. They haven't got the tech right. And I just think how they're selling them, I get it. I'm just not sure I'd pay that sort of money over the competitors. So that was just a little bit of a quirky one. And for me, the car that really – and I know it's a budget car, and I know it's supposed to do what it's supposed to do, and it costs $300,000 or $400,000 – was the Hyundai Grand i10 sedan. There was just nothing that car did right for me. The whole drivability, the steering had a weird fake feel to it. It lacked power. I'm just trying to remember what really the other concern was, the fit, the finish. I just couldn't do that car. I came back. It wasn't light on fuel. And then when you looked and did a competitor comparison, I think it came last in almost every category, bar one, which was a service plan or something. But it's overpriced. I know they've brought it. It's a sedan offering, but there's absolutely no reason why I'd buy one and be in one. It's just an ill-placed product.
Charles, over to you.
So for me, probably quite a big disappointment was the Mazda CX-60. I mean, we've been waiting so long for this, and it is a fantastically well-specced vehicle. It even looks good. The one we had was based on Mazda's new rear-wheel drive platform, so you'd expect that. But it's let down by a very, very disappointing 2.5-liter petrol engine. I can understand why they brought it because of costs and so on, but it just does absolutely nothing. There's nothing to it. You have to rev it to get anything out of it. The comfort is good. Like I said, it looks fantastic, but that engine just absolutely destroys that CX-60 as a package. There is a diesel version coming next year, thank goodness, the 3.3 diesel, but it's going to be a lot more expensive. So, and then you've got something like a Mazda CX-5, which is not as big, but is a lot better. Then the second one is the – and this actually breaks my heart to say this for reason, because I'm personally a big fan of the brand, was the Isuzu D-Max AT35. But they're only bringing in 100 of those a month, but they got the tire pressures badly wrong at the launch. We took it on a very bad off-road section in George, and it was just bouncing everywhere. They later admitted that the tire pressures were probably a bit too firm, but they should have actually just lowered it from the start, to be quite brutal. It was great off-road. It was comfortable, actually, off-road when we did the hardcore stuff. And the other thing is, Isuzu says this is not a Ford Ranger Raptor rival, which it is not. But then again, you are going to get comparisons. It is inevitable that people are going to make comparisons with the Raptor, regardless of what anybody says, like what they did with the Toyota Hilux GR Sport, even though that is about as far removed from a Raptor as anything. So this is going to get compared to the Raptor a lot, and it is just way too expensive if you look at that from a Raptor standpoint. So that's unfortunately that. And then this is probably a bugbear, was the Mercedes C43. There's been everything that's been said about the C43 with the whole downsizing engine thing. The previous one, I think you can attest to that, Mark, that 3-liter V6 was absolutely fantastic. It transformed that car. It actually questions, do you really need a C63, in all honesty? But this whole downsizing thing from a 2-liter, it's by no means bad at all. No means at all. But just the whole downsizing thing will question people. Is this really an AMG? Why don't they just go and buy an A45 and save a hell of a lot of money? So although there's nothing fundamentally wrong with the C43, it's just this whole downsizing thing when you compare it to the previous one.
Well, that just leaves me. I'm going to start with something that is not a bad car at all. It's the new Toyota Urban Cruiser. The reason I'm picking that was moving from the first generation to the second one, the car got bigger. But they kept the price down. Kudos to them for doing that. But it missed out on some specification that the first one had. And what just absolutely killed me dead was the fact that it doesn't have a rear wiper. And I mean, that is just, we said it could be anything. It's just a letdown, a disappointment. That's it. Among other things. But that just absolutely killed me. Because one morning I took the kids to school. I couldn't get the demister properly. And it was raining. And I just struggled to see out the back window. And just as simple as that. Lack of a rear wiper. Yeah.
Such a small thing.
Hopefully in the mid-cycle upgrade, they'll see to it. As far as I understand, a lot of these specs were packaged together, and to keep the price down, they had to obviously make business decisions. Fully understood. It's still a popular car. That just didn't sit lekker with me. Another experience we didn't sit so lekker with me was the Haval P-Series Limited Bucky. Looks good, got all the tech. I mean, inside diamond little stitching on the doors, looks very pretty. But for being marketed as such a hardcore off-road product, I thought the ride is just a bit firm. And obviously, we're privileged to experience a lot of cars on a lot of different surfaces and conditions. I didn't take that to any off-road course or anything like that. I just thought the little gravel I did was a bit hard on my back. And I think it's probably only going to get worse if we take it into some more serious stuff. And then my biggest disappointment of the year, sorry to say, must be the Fiat 500X. Predominantly for two things, the automatic gearbox. We had it a few years ago before the facelift, and it was a manual. And that sort of kept itself in balance. Very like a pull in second and third gear, and it's almost like the automatic gearbox. It's doing exactly the opposite. Nice things about that car and the whole badge. I mean, and it's an it's basically the Fiat 500, and we all love the Fiat 500. Drives. It's old, and it's just still brilliant. It's still having a Fiat 500 badge with an X on the end, and it's still got good little things like that massive sliding sunroof and everything. But I think the price is just, especially with the influx of Chinese things we're always talking about, I think the price is a bit high, and I think that gearbox absolutely kills the whole drive of the car. And it's unfortunate, because I would like that car to do well. It's got a Fiat 500 on, which I really like, and that's unfortunately just the way it is. But like we said, we're not trashing any of these cars. We're just saying which stood out for us, the good things, the bad things. And that's it, gentlemen. Thank you very much for a lekker year. Lots of things happening next year. And we'll start again in January. And you can, listeners out there, you can subscribe to the Citizen YouTube channel. And then you can tune in every week for Pit Stop. We'll start again in the middle of January. Thank you very much for your support this year. I'm Jaco van der Merwe. I was joined by Mark Jones and Charles Bosch, signing off for 2023. Cheers.